Well, we'd like to welcome you again back to Hello Earth. Here we are in hour 16 with Michael, and we already have caller Stan on the line. And we're talking about this luminous object out near Saturn that now you can see with telescopes, and Cassini has seen it, and it's amazing what is actually on the NASA site to see, and you can see that on helloearth.info. And Michael was just talking about, or I was talking about how wonderful the Urantia book is, and he was saying the Bible's a little harder to study. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Hi. Yes, what were you just saying about the Urantia book or the Bible?
Oh, well, the Bible is, it's considered by a lot of the Christian churches as the authority on God's real word. But it is it's not easily understood. And there's why there are so many people who got a little different take on what something says or something about it. So it's a little harder to understand sometimes, especially without the anointing of the Holy Spirit, the actual supernatural revelatory power to help, take the Bible apart, as well as, these centuries upon centuries of biblical scholarship that's gone into trying to make the Bible easier. But the Urantia book, it's like a very easy read. It's like a textbook, very, very thick, full of information, and it's very, to me, very, it's in order. It's made in a logical sense, in a logical order. What it does lack, to me, is many of the wonderful prophecies that are in the Bible that have already come true, and that are many that have not come true and that people are looking toward right now being fulfilled. But the Urantia book also has stages of development of planets and, the movement toward different epochs and developments in developing a world into coming into a level of being fully adopted into this level called light and life, a really perfect world. Mm-hmm. But that's what we're looking forward to right now. But that's my take on the Bible, and I've spent over 35 years studying the Bible, and not just reading the Bible, but reading the scholarship behind the Bible. Many wonderful scholars out there who have done a really fantastic job on making the Bible easier to understand, and also making it easier to run through subjects. But the Urantia book is laid out perfect. It's easy to just go right through. I want to know about something. There it is. You just look it up.
Yes, you can even look it up in the index and go right to it.
Right to it, yeah. And I haven't seen really terrible conflict. There's stuff in there between the two that there seems to be a little conflict, but if you really understand it, take it to heart, it is a conflict. It's just more information, more truth in the Urantia book.
And the Urantia book refers to that as kind of a clarification.
Clarification, good.
Yeah.
Do you think the Urantia book is a little bit more difficult do you think it's more difficult for someone who hasn't read the Bible?
No, not necessarily. The Urantia book, the way it is written, I think appeals to people of all races and ethnic backgrounds and religions on this planet. We have got the Urantia book now, I think, in about 11 or 12 languages, and it is being widely accepted and demanded and high demand in some of these other languages in some of these other countries. They are just getting so excited about it. It's, It's just amazing.
Well, that's very interesting, because as I see the Urantia book in this country, no one knows about it.
That's right. Actually, I would say in the other languages that are now available in the other countries, the word is spreading actually faster than it is here in the United States.
I believe it. Well, I hope we can bring the Urantia book more into the light, and somehow, Michael, I get a feeling that Tan and Nella and many other Urantial beings on the luminous architectural world is listening.
Yeah, the world. That city up there around Saturn. That's the one they told me is called New Jerusalem, and it was a little bit of a surprise later on that, you know, discovered that name is what it is out there. But it does match what they would probably, God would probably put for his actually, our solar system and actually Earth itself is very special in the sense that the Creator Son, Jesus Christ, became mortal and actually went through one of the worst physical deaths ever for any mortal man to go through here on Earth. And he chose Earth for that purpose. And it makes sense they put an outpost here close by.
To watch us.
Excuse me?
To watch us.
To participate in a very, very important event. It's the last bestowal, according to the Urantia book, that Christ went in descending toward his creatures. And both the Urantia book as well as the Bible declare that he had run a tremendous victory. And the Bible is more poetic in its description, how he ascended on high, leading captivity captive, and he gave gifts unto us men. And because of that, we can participate in his very nature, the divine nature. And this was taught to me over there by the group in who later found out through the Urantia book, as a Dano, was really a very, very high order of being, creature, one of the highest orders of teacher sons, Trinity teacher sons. And actually, we're right now, because of that, I suspect that we're still in this, we're actually in this teacher son epoch, where because of the order of appearance is not following the usual according to your Urantia book, but I just go by what's happened. And I'm just saying, I met a great teacher over there. He called himself a Dano, and he introduced me to the Urantia book. He introduced me to the very principle that I mentioned, that we are very special in their eyes. We're like royal people, royalty, that are, I guess, got something special going on. Maybe I don't fully understand what it is, but what makes it so special, but that we can participate in the divine nature through it. And we were selected, even though we're pretty screwed up anyway, and trying to rule ourselves. And that's probably the reason we're screwing up, because we're not supposed to rule ourselves. We're supposed to have the creator of the universe rule over us. And that's not happening. That's part of the events going on. Anyway, that's what's happened to me. And of course, we've got a lot of people out there who do know about the Urantia book. There's also a lot of people who really sincerely know God and have made their circles, and they've made their circles, and they're could very well not see physical death. The Urantia book also describes people who have in different worlds come to a level of maturity where more and more mortal people actually don't see death. They get translated to the Urantia level without seeing a physical death. However, that may have happened a couple of times recorded in the Bible with Enoch, who was and then walked with God and then all of a sudden wasn't there. And then Elisha, who was actually taken up, and he was physically taken up and is not there. And I've been receiving a little bit more imaging remembrances, and there are other human beings there who were going to the same class as I was. And some of them I recognize as being quite famous people, but others are just regular people. So there's more people who have been taken to New Jerusalem and probably don't even remember it, but have been taught deep in their soul about the truths that are laid out both in the Urantia book and in the Bible, and some of the stuff I just went through, which is one of the most important ones, that we can participate, or we are meant to participate in the divine nature, the very nature of God, which is love, but at a level that, if you could experience it, you know how far away we are from really accomplishing that. Even in ourselves, but it's just so perfect. Nella's voice, her way of projecting love, was so pure, so peaceful, full of no judgment involved, just love. And then you just feel like you're so safe. You know they're not in there to take control of you or anything. So that's the kind of level that they project.
Was she
perfect people, like I call the quants.
Was that a projection with her eyes or with her mind?
With her mind, telepathically. But it's the power of her telepathy is not just her voice. Her voice was female and had a lower tone to it, a warm low tone to her voice. But she, the power was in embracing who you are, actually really projecting this pure love. And I after receiving that, I really was open. You know, the fear drained out of me, and I was fully able to interface with them, walk around freely with them, and just be perfectly. I wasn't naked, but I was dressed in this white robe. So was the Dano. He was in white, and others had uniforms. Both Tan and Nella had uniforms on, but just. Not having your guard up, you don't need it. You don't need to hide behind a mask, some kind of personification. Just forget it. You're just wide open, an open book to them. So this is, but there's no judgment in it. You're just an open book.
A wide open book.
A wide open book. Yeah. And then I tried to hide behind some of this concept of trying to be correct, trying to act correctly.
Yes.
Didn't like that. They'd prefer if I just be myself.
You mean just relax?
Just relax. Just be yourself. If I said something, I remember saying something like Tan. I looked at Tan. I said, Tan, your eyes are bloodshot. Why are your eyes so bloodshot? And Nella told me, they're always like that. Yeah.
So.
I mean, you know, it's just come out with whatever your opinion is, your thought. That's how the concept that you freely, you know, are, if it can be that way. But too many times, walking through society, we try to build ourselves up more correctly because of some structure that we think we're supposed to fit within, instead of just being true to who we are. You know, I mean, nobody's brought up to be a murderer, a totally evil person. You know, we weren't born into this world to be that way. And then from that point, you just move in closer and closer. You can never make your circles with an agenda.
Michael, I have a question.
Yes.
What do you think of the process that is called precognition?
Precognition, you mean you know something's going to happen and it's going to happen?
What do you think causes that?
Well, they explained it to me. He said, time, this is how you looked at time. It stretches a string. And you go from one end to the other. And then he just took this string and put it in the palm of his hand. And this is how we look at time. It's the same time. But if you notice all the intercepting points in that string, as you crumple it and grow tight, there are many intercepting points in that timeline. At those points is how you will begin to view events, and consequently precognition is part of the natural gift, and you know, it's one of the things I came back with. I have a lot of precognition. A lot of times I don't understand what I see, because much of it has to do with me, and then when I run into it, I remember when my first daughter was born, I receive a lot of imagery and words and the whole imagery. And I finally I told my wife, I kept telling her, you know, this is going to happen. The nurse is going to come in about 2 minutes and she's going to do this. And it would happen. And I said, this machine is going to break down in about another hour. And it would break down. And then I'd say, and she said, telling me, how do you know that? I said, this is all part of the things that are given to me. And then finally I went and I said, okay, I'm going to show you something. And we're going to look at my brand new baby, and you know, on the other side of the glasses. And I said, you see those two women over there talking? I'm going to go over there. I'm going to tell you right now what they're going to be saying. And I gave them the full paragraph. They're going to be discussing this. They're going to talk about these things. And they're going to say, I don't know why they didn't put the little, you know, blue on it. They're boys. And something like that it was. And I told the whole sentence structure, everything. Then we walked over, and in about 2 minutes, that whole conversation came out. And all precognition is that you're able to intercept timelines because in yourself, you're not bound physically to the timeline anymore because you've been moronticized. You've gone, you see, the fact is that many of us, as we make our circles, we become more morancho. We get morancho gifts, and one of them is precognition.
I have been occasionally experiencing precognition,
right?
But I've not been able to control it. It's been spontaneous,
right?
And I've experienced some precognition now for a number of years, and I was just wondering how in the world that was possible, and what if it means anything.
It's because your dimensionality, you're making your circles, and you're getting deeper toward the first circle. And because of that, you're picking up these things, dimensional properties, which has to do with moving past the constraints of being just a physical being to a more morantial being. Your spiritual part is just opening up on you. And because of that, you're running into yourself. You know, you run into an event of yourself. This is one of the most common of all morancho or precognitive experiences that you'll receive that because you're running the timeline. There's another one which is much different, but that would have to do with more like remote viewing kind of stuff.
Just I tried that once. Well, actually, I tried it for about 6 months and succeeded one time, and it scared me so bad I didn't try it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I succeeded the one time, and then when I didn't really know what I was doing. I mean, I was practicing yoga meditation, and I, after about 6 months of nightly practice, I did it, and boy, that stopped me.
Yeah, it can scare you quite a bit if it.
Yeah. Well, what I was afraid of was not that. What made me afraid is that I was afraid I was breaking some laws or something, that I was doing something I shouldn't be doing. And that could have been because of my own superstitious ideas at that time.
Yeah, but these are just levels of, some of the levels of Marancho growth. They'll become part of your sensory adaptation.
If I were to do that now or try that now, I wouldn't have those problems, I don't think, of where I would be worried about that.
Yeah. So I'd say just, and that's one of the signs that you're getting deeper into your center, making all your circles. The first few aren't so spiritual, the first outer ones. They're more natural, more taming taming out the animal part of you. But as you go deeper, these things start to happen. And other things too. And you get connected as you get deeper. You get connected with other elements, other entities. You mentioned like secondary midwayers, and they help out a lot. I mean, I could see where certain events or certain things were changed, and it required a physical interface also to change some of these things, as well as sometimes there's real healing that happens. You know, people's cancers turn around. These things are made by my brain power or some kind of spiritual. These are actual beings that actually help fix up some people. And I think the Rancho book does well in explaining what's happening.
You know, people around the world that experience tragedies, sorrows, deaths of their loved ones, or terrible things that happen to them, wonder. And these things that do happen, whether it's a tornado or a hurricane or an earthquake or a car accident or a murder, happen to both good and evil.
Yeah.
But yet, you know, people tend to be superstitious. And those that a lot of times have not suffered a terrible calamity, but witnessed it, maybe down the street, think and tell people, well, they were blessed because they didn't experience it, as though they were special over and above those that did experience it. And that always bothers me.
Yeah, well, that's where sometimes these little Rancho gifts, listening to your internal adjuster, that's one of the ones that happens sometimes. And I was telling Curtis about an example, okay, and I gave him a practical example where I thought it unusual at a traffic light that I kept getting this message, put your car in neutral. I never put it in neutral, just step on the brake and wait till the light changes. You know, that way I could just press the gas and I'm off. But no, put the car in neutral. So I listened, I put the car in neutral. And the light changed. And when the light changed to green, I stepped on the gas by instinct. And of course, the engine was, just revved, and I said, oh, I'm in neutral. But just when I said I'm in neutral, this car went barreling through the intersection at nearly 100 miles an hour. And if I had stepped on that gas, I would have been broadsided by that car.
Oh, my Lord.
And this is the kind of advantages that are given to us because we have no idea of the dimensionality beyond our, sometimes beyond our dimension where we are, and the actual spiritual dimensions, with multiplicities of spiritual dimensions, which are now being explained in physics,
right,
are able to observe something like that and come down with a warning if we're listening to...
I know that the Urantia book states that our seraphic guardian angels, their assignment is to guard us.
Right.
And, their primary concern is the... preservations of our souls,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, they're interested in the development of our souls.
Right. Yeah.
And I just wonder if people who are, as they become more spiritually attuned to the spiritual forces that are helping them, if that attunement as they proceed in the circles of attainment, enable them to intuitively avoid some of the accidents of nature and disasters that other people, while they may be good people, may be mostly focused on earthly things. And, you know, if you're mostly focused on earthly things rather than any spiritual things, perhaps you don't heed any warnings because you don't hear them.
Well, actually, you're more attuned to everything, not just, you just grow. Essentially, the way I've experienced it in attaining circles is that you actually grow. You don't become less attuned to the world and more attuned spiritually. You just grow more attuned to the world and more attuned spiritually. So you actually dimensionally keep growing. As you make your circles, you become a more and more complete, more divine being, more finished in Him, the Creator Son, more like Him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that actually... You don't eliminate your interface to this world.
Right.
Yeah, it's very important. I was wondering, you know, how important it was, but it's actually more important than... when I wanted to jump into the regeneration chamber, you know, if you go in, they pointed it out to me, and they said, this is where, you know, if people go in there and actually really don't die anymore. And... probably was controlled by, you know, master physical controllers or some other devices that they have that, you know, would renew a person, but also would, you know, they told me would kill my body. You know, my body would die. Essentially, it would have to become another kind of body, and we know that that's talked about in the Urantia book as well as the Bible, but. You know, these kinds of stuff are really interesting, how they point it out, you know, so that hopefully, you know, we will stay mortal for the development as fully as we can, because they said basically, they looked at each other, and it's, it was funny, because there was one of the beings was, he looked at my guy, the guy that was always with me, and I heard them say, he needs his body, doesn't he? And he says, yes, he needs to fulfill what his, you know, his task in the mortal body. So, you know, there's a lot that goes on in our mortal body that we got to fulfill as mortals. Otherwise, we can never make the next ascension. It would not be complete. I think the Urantia, but I remember it said something about if we were to make the move without going through your progress, you'd be like, being born in this world without hearing or eyesight or, lacking some of the...
we need the earth to experience to be true.
In the next... And we were just talking about how, the Urantia senses start to develop. And these are very important ones.
The architectural sphere near Saturn, do you think that it very well may change course and come and start orbiting our planet?
Well, I'm already got the problem with the description because I was told the name New Jerusalem, and it's been revealed to me shortly. And because of that, it's describing the last two chapters of the Book of Revelation, and it does. It's the world. It's the biggest UFO, actually identified object landing on Earth, and it's given that position in the future, and. A thousand years away, and according to the Urantia book, and I'm pretty sure we're there right now. We're in the Trinity Teacher Sun stage, just before we get that landing of New Jerusalem here, that actually puts them. It's a outpost New Jerusalem. That's basically what I really feel it is. It's an outpost of many activities. And I think it will eventually come in closer and then eventually make a landing here, fulfilling the Book of Revelation as John saw it.
But not in 2012.
2012?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think it's 1,000 years away.
Yeah.
But I believe that there's going to be so much truth brought to the world over time, over this thousand-year period, this period of the teacher sons who are already operating. I said that the Dano could probably walk anywhere on Earth and not have a problem. I mean, he would be a Caucasian. I looked at him as, he looks like a Caucasian, he wasn't an Asian or a black or anything, no. But he could without any problem. So they, just from looking at it and interfacing with him and him telling me, teaching me these things, I would say that he could very well be operating here on Earth, not famous, but just making his rounds and going, where the next steps need to be taken, and eventually it will come to a point where, that object will come in closer, New Jerusalem will come in closer, the whole world will know about it. And
what I would like to know is that, I wonder what the purpose is of all of those huge flying ships that are being built inside the architectural sphere.
Well, they told me it wasn't to mine minerals. Because I guess, this must be, maybe you need materials and minerals and things like that. And they said, no, they don't need to use that technique. And then they kind of asked me a question, how did you get here? And I said, in a ship. And I said, okay. So that's a pretty big ship for one person. There is, in 2012, a peak sunspot cycle. We've had, in the last peak sunspot cycle, we've had huge coronal mass ejections that missed Earth completely. We got some side scatter, that actually shut down our power grid, but no direct hit. But not all coronal mass ejections are the same. This cycle, we're looking at what could possibly be a tremendous super cycle within the 11-year sunspot cycle. There are super cycles. Sun doesn't necessarily follow just repetitive 11-year cycles. There can be cycles within cycles, or cycles that the smaller cycles are in. We recognize the 11 years. But these things can happen, which can cause some problems that you know, the concept of Noah's Ark, of what was happening. I mean, this time, I have a feeling this time it's not Noah building the Ark. You know, nobody's commanded out to build an Ark on Earth. What we are commanded to look up when we see certain things happening, and look up meaning get ready, and to have the certain characteristics. And these characteristics are not to be fearful, because the fearful and the unbelieving and those that love being basically having the mortal life are excluded from that list for some kind of characteristic that they can, that will eliminate themselves. A person will eliminate themselves by fear. That's one of the biggest ones. So if there's a rescue operation involved, temporary rescue, it could very well involve those larger ships. The Bible talks about 144,000 pure souls. These 144,000 are made up of, according to the book of Revelation, the 12 tribes of Israel, but we don't even know who they are. They're 10 lost tribes. And it's been so long, they're all mixed up in the world anyway. Probably wouldn't even, they're as far as the tribes there is, they're of every kind of color you can think of. There's one that this is in India, they're in Afghanistan, they're in Japan, they're in China, they're in Africa, they're in England, they're all over the place. These are people where people know where some of these genetics have gone. So we have no idea where they're scattered, but basically the concept of virgin males is what's put up in the book of Revelation. But in what both Riley Martin and what I felt, is there's a purity of genetics involved, certain kind of genetics that needs to be saved. Some of it can go through a burst of solar radiation or solar particle bombardment. But a good chunk of it is going to be preserved without flaw. And way to do that would be to take them away from the bombardment. But it's not all of the Earth will get bombarded.
So are you saying then that these alien-type ships that are being constructed in the architectural sphere are going to be used for that timeline to pull out about 144,000 of the best humans on this planet that have good DNA?
Yeah, this is the ones who are going to be like, your physical beings, mortal beings, good DNA, you might say. But they also said something interesting. They said, hold back. Don't release the problem yet. It's like they can kind of hold back some problems. They have so much ability that they can actually hold back some of the impending whatever it is. It could be asteroid hit. It could be a direct hit from a coronal mass ejection, Planet X or something. But what it amounts to is that they are able to choose this group. And it says, hold back that, hold back this strong angel, hold it back. And we've got to seal all of these people. So we hear about people getting alien implants or things like that. I think that some of this stuff might be the sealing you're talking about. In other words, there's a mark, there's a seal that gets marked of all of these. And then from that point, they'll know, they'll have this group. So,
144,000 people would only be a drop in the bucket,
really,
of the number of people on this planet.
Right.
Is there an implication that other than the 144,000 that are saved, the rest of the population on the planet will pretty well be annihilated?
No. It's a CME, if it's a CME or any external problem, would cause a tipping point. I don't think there's an extinction. In fact, there is no extinction. I asked that question as far as Earth, and they showed me the actual death of Earth. They said this is how it's going to be. And basically, it's just what we know is the sun will go red, be a red giant, and gobble up the Earth. And that's it. That's what they call it. But so as far as this rescue is for more, but for all those who are on the journey, who have jumped on our journey toward, you know, everlasting life. This concept of moving from mortal to morancho, more of an immortal person, and taking part in the development of making these circles. The falling away of the physical body would seem like a death, but actually it is in part the other part, this innumerable part that the Bible also mentions, which is sort of like the what they've been quoted as, like you said, something like 1840 something. It was pointed out by a particular person, pointing out this concept of the rapture. But the rapture actually was taught to the Apostle Paul. And from what he describes his experience being, it sounds like he was also, as well as the Apostle John, taken to the same New Jerusalem ship and given the kind of knowledge that was able for them to bring back and teach. So the ones with the majority of the world is considered, you know, those that perish in having made their circles or having turned their hearts toward God or toward the everlasting journey. Their physical life may end, may very well end, but their elevated spiritual life or morancho life just begins at that same point. So, yes, yeah, I think that there will be some big problems involving some of the people that get hit directly, but many of them will be ready, in a sense, to get hit directly and make them
there. Would you say there is an implication that there's going to be chaos on this planet at that time?
Oh, there's a building chaos that is already happening now, and it's just a tipping point, and of course it will happen, but it is a point of this is part of this education of the Lucifer Rebellion, and how this thing takes on, and how the full result of this comes out. It's pretty much part of this case. So,
do you have any premonitions regarding the immediate future for this country, and, for example, whether or not we're going to actually end up having a war with Iran?
I just received a little bit today. Strange it should, yeah. In the sense that the war in Iran is something that, you know, is sort of happening already. Is playing a kind of war with us already, coming over and going, you know, making his statements at Columbia University, and, you know, giving a picture of how much of, he doesn't even know what the word lie means. So the war of words is there already. So the war of bombs and killing, well, it's already been happening, but not directly with Iran. I do not feel that Israel would take a serious nuclear threat and sit idly by. No, I think they would just start up the whole thing on their own. And I think we, the United States, are going to sit on our hands. And that is a judgment that we'll have to face if we do sit on our hands and watch the whole thing. Our very core of who we are will start to break down when we sit on our hands.
So you think that eventually Israel will take action against Iran while the United States just kind of sits by and watches?
Yes. I think that the character of the United States is being played out by the radical Islamic. They consider the United States not only the great Satan or something like that, but they consider the United States a bunch of cowards. In 1997, I was given the opportunity to meet a group of what I said was Muslims, but I was intercepted by the leader. And he was apparently a cell group leader of an Al-Qaeda cell group leader, because I walked into their meeting room and Osama bin Laden's pictures were all over the wall. And this was 1997. And they had already been asking questions like, do the planes get fueled up and where to go? And they had Hummers and they wanted to blow up some of our supercomputer sites and Air Force sites and stuff. In a sense, they were asking weird questions. So 2 and 2 was being put together by some of these people. But what this particular leader did come up and looked me, face to face, and he said, "We're not Muslims. That's a cloth from India. We're Muslim." And I said, you know, I said, "I apologize." Then his second statement that came up was, he said, "You Americans are nothing but cowards. Cowards, that's all you are. And we can depend on that." You know what I'm saying? What I'm saying is they got us pegged as far as this great nation of us, and basically they are hoping that we're going to play right into that role as far as the radical Islam.
They're wanting to take over the world, it looks like. They think of Christians as infidels.
Oh, yes, but that's their strategy. And I was allowed to get really up close and personal, so I could make this statement and actually know that that's really part of their big strategy. It's being taught in all their groups and they really hope they can depend on it, because that's how they were going to, once the United States sits on their hands, watch what's happening in the Middle East, starts to pull out, sits on their hands, they're going to be able to start working more and more of their other plans. And this is what you're talking about, this Iran war, possible war, not going to be directly with us, but Israel will definitely not sit idly by. And right now, Iran is probably not working alone. They probably got Syria involved, because, you know, they might even throw all kinds of energetics over there, plutonium and stuff like that. You know, to make it's a tangled web over there. Well, anyway, that's politics. So
I don't know if you're aware of it yet or not in the Urantia book, but the Urantia book refers to a one world government as the future, not only of this planet, but all planets that eventually evolve to a one-world government as their society evolves.
Right.
And they get closer and closer to the light and life stage. But
right.
In the process of advancing to a one-world government, it also warns that if changes are brought about too quickly in society, or are forced upon society too quickly, that it can be very disastrous.
Exactly.
And in our case, I think we have large elite power brokers on this planet that are trying to hasten the one world government for their own financial gain.
Well, actually, it's the goal, it's an Islamic goal, really. One world religion, one world government.
Well, yeah, Islamic. Yeah, they want to take over
goal,
the world.
And they're pretty intent in accomplishing that goal. And they see, as far as the Christian group, the free world, you might say, as being, you know, a problem. And it's interesting when I found out that the Urantia book was pretty much bestowed, given to the United States in Chicago, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that kind of points out something to me, you know.
Yes.
It could have been given to Iran.
Yes.
But they weren't open to it, you know.
Well, and they wanted to choose the English language because it was the most complex language on this planet. The English language has over 1 million different words, and I think the next closest language to that only has like 20,000 words.
Oh, I see. Its English I remember at New Jerusalem architectural sphere there. They were talking English. English was like, you know, I could. Not everybody did, but for those that I conversed with, it was all in English. And it's interesting. And the Bible also said that the end time, the speaking with the mouth of the lion, which is, you know, English is, the lion represents England. So speaking
I
with the mouth of the lion.
I kind of have a feeling that there are several movements on this planet going on at the same time, like the Muslim movement of trying for world domination as a Muslim religion, but at the other side, on the economic and business side, there is the power struggle for world domination and a one world government from a financial power broker.
Both of them are mentioned in describe, you know, just the description of the economic one is Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, that mother of harlots having to do with all kinds of commerce, You know, the Urantia book describes economies in worlds where there is light and life. And was there any mention of just making stuff just for consumption and just, you know, luxuries and stuff like that in the Urantia book about these kinds of economies?
Well, there is a paper on world government. I wish I could remember more about that section.
Oh, but, yeah, but
it's very interesting.
As far as the worlds that have come up to a position of light and life, all the necessities are taken care of. Health care is no issue. And art is wonderfully expressed and valued. But just the kind of economy that we have was not described. The world economy as it is right now was not described as a world that is in light and life. So
there's
got to be a change, you know.
You mentioned a while ago, we've probably got at least 1,000 years for
to
that.
Change, to make proper changes.
Yes.
So anyway, that's one. And as far as the one world religion, one of the interesting things was that I remember who was one of these radical Islamic guys that said in that day when forgot the name of him, but it represents that great Islamic God, I guess you might say. I don't know. Not Allah, but some that great teacher or great one who would come to and would approach Christ that day and say, "Why did you say that you were God's son? You are not God's son." So they actually didn't deny the bestowal of Christ on earth.
Yeah.
So that is one of the basic signs of an antichrist attitude. Whereas the other religions of the world, major ones, don't necessarily do the same thing. They really, you know, do not go that far. Buddhism doesn't really know, so they don't say anything. That's another major one. And then the so in placing, you know, in placing where could radical Islamic fundamentalists be, they would probably slip into that role that is described within the Book of Revelation as the antichrist type group. Not saying all Islamic, because the calling toward God is made in the heart and the deepness of the person individually, one person at a time. Anyway, that's some of the
I think we probably have gone over an hour, haven't we, Curtis?
Well, we have just less than a minute left.
Oh, I see. We didn't get started for a few minutes.
And I was hoping to get back to what you said, Michael, as far as what your transmission or the communication you had with the architectural world. Was that today?
Yes, in the sense that we're not going to go bomb Iraq.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Iran. It's the other way around.
Well,
the other way around.
We're not going to go aggressively against Iran. Essentially, we're going to start sitting on our hands a lot. I mean, that's that's the slope, that's the attitude that is.
Well, that's interesting. We'll pick this up next week on Tuesday. And Stan, thank you for calling in. And Michael, it's a pleasure having you back again.
Thanks for the privilege.
Yes, it's great to have you, Stan. Thanks for calling. And we'll do this again next week.
Okay. Oh, I won't be here.
All right.
Goodbye.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.